Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Monday, January 31st, 2022. The time is 1:32. I'm Senator Mia Costello, and I would like to, before we get started, thank our recording secretary, Carrie. Appreciate you, and also our LIO operator, Doug. Without your help, we could not make this meeting available to the public and all the important recordings and what have you. So I want to thank you. I'd like to welcome Senator Rivak. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being here. Senator Stevens, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Senator Gray Jackson, welcome and thank you for being here. Today on the agenda, we have one item. It's House Bill 55. We've got the sponsor, Representative Andy Josephson. Welcome, and your staff, welcome. Here to present the bill, it's a peace officer, firefighter, retire benefits bill. This is going to be the first hearing of the bill. We have invited testimony, and then we also have noticed public testimony on the bill today, so we will spend the afternoon learning about your legislation. And I think what I'll have you do, Representative Josephson, is walk through the bill and hold questions until after we've had the sectional. I think that's probably how we'll handle that today, and then we'll field questions from committee members. So welcome, Representative Josephson, to the Labor and Commerce Committee. Please feel free to introduce yourself and your legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Andy Josephson. I represent the UMed in Anchorage. Senator Gray Jackson is my senator, for the record. Happy about that. I'm here today, and I'm grateful that the committee has scheduled House Bill 55, which creates a hybrid benefit for a Tier 5. So we have Tier 4, and in teaching, we have up to Tier 3, or education. This goes to this would create a Tier 5 for peace officers and firefighters, corrections officers, and other public safety officers. This mess is going to be interesting. So, Madam Chair, just to go down memory lane, in 2006, the legislature learned about a state of alarm or a state of urgency regarding our pension. And there was litigation about that. And we had some success, probably not all that we wanted. We settled part of it, I think. And essentially, in 2006, the legislature suspended what are called defined benefits so that all employees hired after that date, sometime in 2006, got equivalent, what is called a defined contribution. It's a sort of a 401k, 403b, those kinds of accounts. And we've sailed along since then in that rubric. There was one effort, and I was mistaken on the House floor when I said that this bill is a historic bill. I was correct that it's a historic bill, but Senator Egan passed in 2012, or saw passed, the Senate passed, Senate Bill 121, which would have had a more broader implications for pension reform. At any rate, this bill nonetheless is very historic. Certainly in the last decade, no chamber has passed anything like this. The bill was first, in one variation or another, brought by Republican representatives Holmes, Millett, and most recently Chuck Kopp. And a couple days ago, Representative Kopp wrote what I think, although I'm excited about the prospect of the bill, was a wonderful argument for this bill. And I encourage you to read that. We can get that to you if your committee doesn't have it. The bill before you affects only about 2,200 people. Now, I want you to hear this. It affects about 2,200 people today. Now, that number can change, of course, out of about 43,000 active public employees. So in my mind, that means it's low risk. We're dealing with a fraction, just a slice of the pie of all public employees. There are there are about 50% more public employees than the 22 or 2,300, but they're already under a defined benefit. That is, they're older gentlemen and gentlewomen. So this is about 5% of all public employees. The bill is a hybrid bill in that it combines a defined benefit pension with a defined contribution health benefits. Part of the reason for this, and this is already what I will call a give, that's the word I use. What is the class of beneficiaries giving? Are they fighting for the most generous plan? No. You will hear how they're not fighting for the most generous plan. They want a plan they can live with and retire with. And that will, we believe, and the evidence supports, will encourage them to stay in Alaska and take care of us and our loved ones. That's the critical part. But right now, retirees in Tier 4 get a defined contribution health plan, which is called a reimbursable savings account. And, you know, there are people that know more about it than me, but the critical feature is it's not generally going to be enough to pay the premiums until you get to Medicare. It is sort of by definition inadequate healthcare. The class that are the stakeholders that I'm supporting with this bill are aware of that, and they're giving on that issue. So the risk for the state's unfunded liability as per health is sort of non-existent. It doesn't exist. This group has historically been treated different under PERS laws. And so the fact that we're asking that they be treated differently here is not unusual. Public safety employees have lower statutory retirement ages than other groups. Now, you're going to see how in this circumstance, we're changing something monumental in that respect. And police, fire employees are classified and tracked separately in the PERS system from other employees. So there are already, and there are a couple other differences. So if you're asking why are we giving this option to public safety workers and not to the clerk at the courthouse across the street, they've always been treated differently in the way retirements are issued. But there are other significant differences as well. Here's one of them. The bodies, the physicality of a public safety worker wears down by the nature of their jobs. And we, you know, if they have to work until deep into their 60s to finance a retirement they can live on, there's going to be higher workers' comp rates for that. But they have unique, they're exposed to unique, direct, and consequential harm, and they do that for us. And so that's another unique quality. The other unique quality, and this really comes home to me. When we hire an accountant to work at some agency, a person gets their accounting degree, they may get a student loan, but they're responsible for becoming an accountant. We don't make them into accountants. That is an incredibly unique part of this. The state and local governments spend $125,000, sometimes $200,000 to train these folks. And the problem, Madam Chair, is that after 5 years, their defined contribution becomes portable and they take it with them and they go to a place where they can have a pension they can retire with. So what we're seeing, and this is, by the way, this isn't me saying this. This is Commissioner Cockrell saying this. So if you ask Commissioner Cockrell, do we have a pension problem with our first responders? I promise you, he will say yes, because he's written it and he's said it multiple times. But we have a hollowing out of our workforce. We have the very young and fit, not that 40 plus people can't be fit, but we have the young who are in that, oh, I'm going to do this for 5 years and leave category. And then we have the more, say, the grayer group. And they're, you know, if they were working in 2005, they've got a pension they can rely on. So they're going nowhere. Moving on. So it's that middle age group, the 30-somethings, the young 40-somethings, they're not there. And the sense I get is if you went to a fire station, you would see that that was true. We are training our employees, and we do it very well. And this is well known. We do it in Anchorage. We do it at Sitka. We train them, and then they take this portable plan. And let me give an example of the cost of this. And I mentioned it before. The cost of this is in the millions of dollars. Per year. If 2% of the workforce leaves every year, and we believe the actual turnover is higher than that, quite a bit higher, you would lose 68 employees out of 3,400. 2% of 3,400, 68 employees. Well, if each employee cost $120,000 to train, we've lost $8 million of training costs that went to Seattle or Portland or Madison, Wisconsin, or fill in the blank. If you multiply that 8 million times 5 years, just 5 years, you're at $40 million. And if you multiply it times 20 years, you're at $160 million. So, and by the way, the highest that we've seen on training costs is the airport police and fire. I guess I can only guess it's because they do police and fire. So you get, there's a lot going on there. $269,000 to train. Now, you would rightly want to know, is this plan going to be solvent? Because we've experienced 2006, we're not going back there. The answer is absolutely yes. And I'm going to talk to you about why it's yes. First of all, the state's actuary, and I want you to, you know, I really encourage you to listen to the state's actuary. I think that's Mr. Kirshner, maybe Mr. Scott, or both. But they say this plan is remarkably solvent. And the number to look for is, as I understand it, if a plan in some any town USA is at 80% sort of self-sustaining, then it's sort of a B or high grade. It's sort of, it's adequate. This plan rarely drops, according to the actuaries, beneath 90% and is frequently well above 100%. In other words, there's an argument that the plan is overfunded, okay, which gives me some concern that we're not being as generous as maybe we should be. But again, compromise is the name of the game. The firefighter's own actuary testified in Chuck Kopp's bill and in this bill. He believes it rarely will drop beneath 90%. And the way they do this is they say, all right, how long will people live? How much will the stock market fluctuate? What are the expected rates of return? And I'll let the experts sort of get into that. But here's the other thing. People will say, hey, the state shouldn't bear all the risk. Madam Chair and committee, the state does not bear all the risk. There are a series of triggers, and this is modeled over after several other states, I think Wisconsin, South Dakota, Washington State. There are a series of triggers. I've heard them called gives, that's the word I use, but triggers or levers that come into play if there's any threat to the solvency of the plan. First, firefighters and police will have to wait until they're 55 years old. Well, that should tell you right away, no one's getting a pension check until they're 55. That is absolutely, as you all know, that is not the way Tier 1 through 3 worked. So what that means is if you're a firefighter at age 20, you put in 20, 25 years, you're going to very likely have to find other employment for a decade until such time as you can draw retirement. That's a give on the part of the retired class. Next, firefighters and police will have their retirement calculated relative to an average high 5 years, not high three. That's another give. It's meant to drive down the cost and the risk of the plan. I've already noted that, you know, the most ambitious retirement plans would provide health care that you and I and all state employees in this building enjoy. That will not happen. And so until they can draw Medicare at age 65, they will need to use this health reimbursement agreement, which is the same amount of money they're getting under Tier 4. So there's basically it's status quo, no change. And, you know, I have some concerns about how are they going to manage and provide for their health care, but they're going to have to do it. So I've already mentioned several triggers. Here's another one. If the ARM board says that the plan dips beneath 90%, I think is right, it can remove the inflation adjustment. So it's very rare. Typically, in a collective bargaining agreement or a law, you would say, this is what you get. You wouldn't say, this is what you get, however, but this bill has the however. And this inflation adjustment can be removed by the ARM board if the plan is not producing the returns that were expected. So again, the stakeholders are saying, take my inflation. Take it. I want a retirement I can live on. Moving on, there was an important thing that happened. Well, the bill, The bill says that current workers in this class will contribute 8% of their own money to retirement. However, if the ARM board concludes, just as it did with the pension adjustment, that 8% is inadequate under the original bill, it could be adjusted upward, typically in a staggered way, up to 10%. All right. But in a key finance amendment that, to be frank with you, I didn't like, but it's part of this bill, that number was adjusted still upward to 12%. So if you read a criticism of the bill, and the criticism is the state is paying more toward retirement than the retiree class, that is at least partially inaccurate, because the state is not paying 12%, up to 12%. Now, it's more complicated than that. The state under certain circumstances may have to. But the point I'm trying to make is the bill has gotten more cautious and more conservative, and it was made that way by a key amendment in House Finance that is part of the bill before you. I'm almost done here. As you can see, there are any number of things that are these gives or levers or triggers, all sort of the same concept. The net result is retirees will have about 45% of their final replacement wage on the average, rather than the current 31%. Now, does that mean they're going to have more money in retirement? Yes, that's the point of the bill. The point of the bill is to give them more money in retirement. Why is that the point? Because we're tired of watching what I call the train drain. We train and some other state drains them away. We're on a treadmill here. We want to get off the treadmill. The Buck consultants, this was very interesting. In a committee hearing, it was the second to the last hearing, it must have been late April, early May, when asked how much more this would add to the unfunded liability as a matter of timekeeping, they said it would add half a year. So this is the equivalent of your lender saying, your mortgage, Madam Chair, is 20 years to buy that beautiful Anchorage home, and then coming back to you and saying, no, it's not 20 years, it's 20 and a half years. And you have to say, is that significant? Is that half year? I really like this home. I think I'm going to stay and go ahead and buy this home. That's the sort of investment. That increase comes from the fact that the new class we're creating doesn't create any direct imposition in its own silo. It's actually not linked to the previous trust. It's its own trust. However, to make the plan viable, that is to meet the needs meaningfully of retirees, the contribution that is historically made to the unfunded liability, which we're told today is as low as $3.7 billion, down from $11 billion when I first filed for office. $3.7 down from $11 billion. That contribution is reduced. So it was, I think, 12.2% or somewhere in that range. It's going to go to 10%. So this new group of people will not be contributing as much to a problem. Now, here's the key. It's a problem they didn't create, right? They came into this world. They didn't create the unfunded liability. They're still contributing to it, but by a fraction, not as much. Madam Chair, those are the key features. We're very excited about this bill, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to have your staff walk us through the sectional, and at that point, I will open it up for committee questions. So,
can I make a recommendation? The sectional, if you're willing, if Ms. Sorenberg, who's with me, she might want to just eyeball the paragraph. It's up to you. Of course, it's your committee. If you want her to read verbatim, she can do that. But she could also just paraphrase.
Representative Josephson, thank you for the suggestion, but usually what we do in this committee is go into a deep dive on the sectionals, so we'll go ahead and do that. If my members want to change course in the middle, I'll be open to that too, but I think I'd rather be pretty thorough. So welcome, and thank you for walking us through the sectional. If you could state your name for the record.
Lee Sornberg, staff to Representative Josephson. It's quite a lengthy sectional in front of you. So please bear with me, and I will try to be brief and accurate as I walk through it. So Section 1 of your sectional relates to the powers and duties of the ARM Board. It adds new duties to account for appropriate employer contributions to the new tier and allows the determining of the amount of monthly employer contribution under a new subsection AS39.35.255I for the new plan. Section 2 also relates to the powers of the ARM Board and gives them the ability to adjust the post-retirement pension adjustment, the PRPA, that Josephson referred to previously, and the employee contribution rate. Section 3 adds definitions for peace officer and firefighter to the existing that exist in the PERS defined benefit definitions to the ARM Board statute. Section 4 adds the new HRA section established in Section 29 of the bill to the list of retiree medical benefit programs that Department of Administration has the power to procure group insurance for under AS39.30.090A.
And just for the members and those listening, we try to avoid the acronyms, so that HRA is the health reimbursement arrangement. So moving forward, that's what that means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 5 relates to the new health trust established under AS39.30.097A, and it adds the new AS39.35.537 peace officers and firefighters health reimbursement arrangement to the list of medical benefit programs that Department of Administration's commissioner is authorized to pre-fund. Section 6 relates to defined contribution retiree health trust. It adds this new group's health reimbursement account arrangement, to the list of medical benefits that the program that the department can pre-fund as well. Section 7 is a revisor's type technical change using the new preferred term for referring to the state retirement system. Sections 8 through 11. So Section 8, Sections 8 through 11, they deal with adding the new 39.35.537 outline to the new tier's medical benefits and the existing health reimbursement arrangement statutes. Section 8 relates to terminated employees. A person who terminates employment prior to meeting the eligibility requirements set up under this new section loses rights to their contribution in their health reimbursement arrangement, and this is in line with what happens in Tier 4 already. Section 9 makes the new plan eligible for reimbursements from the health reimbursement arrangement. Section 10 allows the administrator to deduct the cost of monthly premiums from that same thing. Section 11 deals with the definition of, quote, eligible person found in AS39.30.4955, which is the section containing definitions for the health reimbursement arrangement statutes, and adds new medical sections to this definition. Section 12 amends AS39.35.095, which lays out applicability of the defined benefit retirement plan statutes found in AS39.35.095 through 39.35.680 to include peace officers and firefighters participating in the defined benefit plan after June 30th, 2006. Section 13 is a conforming amendment to AS39.35.160A, outlining the employee contribution rates for peace officers of this new tier. Section 14, you'll notice, is actually on the slide in front of you. This is one of the first major substantive parts. This is the first, it creates a new subsection that I've been referring to throughout, which is 39.35.160E, setting the employee contribution rate for peace officers and firefighters participating in the defined benefit plan after June 30th, 2006, at 8% of the employee's compensation. The ARM board may adjust the contribution rate from 8 to 12% as needed. Section 15 amends AS 39.35.255A by referring to a new subsection I, and by doing so makes clear that the total employer contribution rate remains at 22% for this new tier. Section 16 is a technical conforming change to accommodate the new subsection I. Section 17 is also a technical conforming change for subsection I. Section 18 is another key section of the bill. It deals with employer contributions. So it adds the new subsection I and J to AS 39.35.255. The new subsection I establishes one of the new features that aims to make this new tier financially viable. It specifies that the employer contribution to the employee retirement benefit will remain at a constant 12%, and that the difference between the 12% contribution dedicated to the employee benefits and the 22% total employer contribution will be available to the past liability. So that means 10% goes to the past liability. New subsection J states that the ARM board may increase the employer contribution to the employee retirement benefit based on the board's decision to increase employee contributions. This is also one of the levers Representative Josephson referred to previously. Section 19 amends AS 39.35.282 regarding employer contributions for medical benefits, conforming that section to changes. Section 20 is another conforming amendment to AS 39.35.370A, outlining that the years of service requirement to become eligible for retirement benefits under the defined benefit retirement plan. Section 21 deals with retirement age, and this is another key section of the bill. It amends AS 39.35.370 by adding a new subsection L detailing the service requirement for peace officers and firefighters participating in the defined benefit plan after June 30th, 2006. Members are eligible for the normal retirement benefits at age 60 with at least 5 years of credited services as a peace officer or firefighter, or at age 55 with at least 20 years of credited service as a peace officer or firefighter. Section 22 is the new AS 39.35.537 medical section is added to the list of plans that elected public officials are not entitled to under the alternative benefit for elected public officials. Section 23 is a conforming amendment to AS 39.35.475A concerning the schedule for making annual post-retirement pension adjustments. Making those payments subject to the exceptions. Section 24 is a conforming amendment related again to the calculation of the annual post-retirement pension adjustment. Section 25 has to do with that post-retirement pension adjustment. And this section contains one of the new features or levers added to help keep the new tier financially viable. This section is intended to allow the ARM board to reduce a benefit, the automatic post-retirement pension adjustment, to keep the new tier financially viable. The proposed new subsections G sets up the adjustment feature in the next subsection, and H allows the ARM board to reduce the PRPA payments to peace officers and firefighters participating in the defined benefit plan after June 30th, 2006. If the plan has an unfunded liability greater than 10%, and clarifies that that feature can be used if the liability to PERS is attributable to employees in the new tier. Section 26 is a conforming amendment to AS 39.35.535A concerning medical benefits for employees under the defined benefit retirement plan. Section 27 is also a conforming amendment, this time to AS 39.35.535C concerning major medical insurance coverage for those under the defined benefit plan. Section 28 amends AS 39.35.535 by adding a new subsection G, which allows peace officers and firefighters participating in the new defined benefit plan to receive HRA as allowed under the new health reimbursement arrangements, as allowed under the new AS 39.25.537. Section 29 is, again, on the slide before you. It's one of the key parts of the bill. It has to do with the new health reimbursement arrangement medical benefit I've been referencing throughout. This is the new section, AS 39.35.537, creating an HRA, a health reimbursement arrangement medical benefit for this new tier. This section specifies the eligibility, costs of premium for the major medical insurance and procedures for participation. Section 30 is another key part of the bill. This establishes the high five rule that Representative Josephson referred to previously. It amends AS 39.35.6804, which contains the definitions for the defined benefit retirement plan statutes. It adds a new paragraph F under the definition of, quote, average monthly compensation that states the calculation for peace officers and firefighters in the new plan will be based on the highest five consecutive years of payroll during the employee's career. Section 31 is a conforming amendment to the definition of employer found in AS 39.35.68018 to include the new tier. Section 32 is a conforming amendment to the definition of normal retirement found under AS 39.35.68026 to include the new service requirements language established in AS 39.35.370L. Section 33 is a conforming amendment to AS 39.35.720 regarding the membership in the defined contribution retirement system, stating that all employees who become members on or after July 1st, 2006, except as provided in AS 39.35.095, are part of the defined contribution plan, thus accepting peace officers and firefighters participating in this new plan after June 30th, 2006. Section 34 adds a new subsection to AS 39.35.750 relating to employer contributions to the defined contribution retirement plan, stating those contribution requirements do not apply to peace officers or firefighters participating in this new tier, and that the new tier's employer contribution requirements are found in the new AS 39.35.255I. Almost done. Section 35 is another fairly important section. We're getting into the uncodified part of the bill here. So Section 35 deals with the election procedure. It adds a new section to the uncodified law of the state of Alaska, allowing peace officers and firefighters hired after June 30th, 2006, and before the bill's effective date, to elect within 90 days of the effective date of this section to transfer their contributions over to their defined, basically from their defined contribution retirement plan that they have into the defined benefit retirement plan. Those transfers will be used to purchase credited service under the defined benefit retirement plan on an actuarially equivalent basis set by the ARM Board. Section 36 has to do with the actual transition of those funds. It adds a new section to, again, the uncodified law of the state of Alaska, creating procedures set out by the contribution retirement plan to the defined benefit retirement plan. This section also states that the election to transition from the defined contribution to the defined benefit plan is irrevocable. If there is a difference between the actual years of service and the equivalent years of service calculated by an employee's contributions to the defined benefit retirement plan, then Department of Administration will allow that person to purchase the difference. If the equivalent years of service are in excess to the actual years of service, then the excess remains under the defined contribution retirement plan. Section 37 adds a new section to the uncodified law of the state of Alaska, instructing the Department of Administration Commissioner to make conforming regulations. And Section 38 is the effective date for Section 37, saying that that part of the bill takes effect immediately. And Section 39 is the effective date for the bill.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you walking us through the sectional very thoroughly. I'm actually going to take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and we are again hearing House Bill 55, the retirement bill for public safety men and women. Before we go into questions, Representative Josephson, you had something you wanted to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just one thing I forgot to mention. It's another sacrifice that those who, I call them the stakeholders, we're willing to give, and that is that there's no cost of living allowance. And I believe it's in Section 24. Now, this won't impact their willingness to stay and protect us as workers. It's not a great incentive for them to want to maybe retire here, but it's not a disincentive either. It just means that, for example, my mother, who's a librarian, was here for decades. She moved to New Hampshire just a few years ago. She's receiving 10% less pension. This is well known. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. And just to clarify for those listening, this bill affects only public safety employees, those men and women. This bill does not reflect public employees as a whole. So appreciate that clarification at the beginning of the presentation. I'm going to go ahead and start out with a few questions and then move on to the committee members before we move into an invited testimony and public testimony. And I want to point to the sponsor statement for the bill. And when this bill was brought to my attention, it was communicated to me very emphatically that this bill does not return us to a defined benefit system for the individuals that it affects. And yet, if a member of the public or someone even listening to this presentation were to look at your sponsor statement, it clearly states that this is a defined benefit bill. Can you respond to that and offer clarification on whether or not this bill returns us to a defined benefit, which all of us here know in 2006 there was huge exposure of the unfunded liability to the state of Alaska, and there's a lot of concern that that is what this bill will do, is it will put us right back into a situation where the state is exposing the state coffers to huge risk.
Madam Chair, here's what I would say. The words defined benefit, it's unmistakable. They're in the title of the bill. However, the thing that anecdotally, and not just anecdotally, but the thing that was well known to generate inflationary costs was medical care. And this bill, as I noted, doesn't do that at all. Now, as I said, It means that someone may need to pay for Obamacare for some period of time or find a job that provides health care. Because my understanding of the HRA is it's 3% of pay, and that just isn't going to afford a retiree, unless they retire maybe at age 53 or 52, to fill the gap before they hit. But even then, the retirement, it'd be more like 57, frankly, or 56, because the retirement payments don't start. Let me start again. They do start at 55. So I was right in the first instance. But the point is, there just isn't any exposure. So you need 20 years, for example. 20 years of service, Section 21. So if you start firefighting with the Anchorage Fire Department at age 20, you could, if you don't feel like you want to continue, at age 40, you would have vested but not be able to draw retirement. And you could stop. Now, presumably your retirement would increase some, and would have to ask the experts on how that would happen. But you could stop at age 40, but you'd sit and wait for 15 years. And during that time, there would be no exposure for medical care. And after that time, there would be no exposure for medical care. You would just have the HRA until Medicare began. So to take us back to where I began in my answer, the thing that with everyone believed was really creating the problem was medical costs. Now, these things fluctuate. And so the ARM board this last fall has said, weirdly, sort of ironically, that the medical part of the trust is actually doing well. But, you know, that's the part that is so unpredictable because of rising costs in healthcare. So, again, it's a hybrid because there is a defined benefit. That's what the pension is. It's a pension just like a federal, an Army retiree would get. But it is controlled and contained. The actuaries say it poses virtually no threat, and you'd have to have bizarre and oddball circumstances where you had 1 or 2% growth in the fund over 5-10 years. And so you'll see, and in fact, it's probably in your packet, you'll see that it rarely dips below any place where alarm bells would sound. And that makes it different from the previous tiers. So it's a hybrid. It's got a defined benefit component. It's got a defined contribution component in the way the healthcare works.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. So just to clarify, you are telling the committee in the public record that there is no change to the health benefit situation for the 2,200 individuals that will be affected by this bill. Is that correct?
100% correct.
And you also stated that the risk to the state in terms of the health portion of this is non-existent. And do you stand by that statement? You said that in your opening remarks.
Madam Chair, I do stand by that statement because the money, as I understand it, the money is part of the 3% that's contributed. Now, that's invested, and it may rise and fall somewhat, but it's it creates no imposition, no threat to the state's fiscal position or its security. It's a fixed rate.
Thank you. And then I do want to pivot because this is the Labor and Commerce Committee. So this is the committee that really focuses on jobs for Alaskans, and that's why I care so much about this committee. I mean, we're talking about the economy and the jobs that Alaskans, you know, in future generations and what have you. So could you share the problem that we face and how this bill is solving that problem in terms of a jobs and training situation, view, I guess that's the best way to put it. You know, what problem does this bill solve, and is this bill the answer? How do we know that?
Madam Chair, we know that mostly because even the Department of Public Safety itself, in their report, which spans 5 years, although one of the years is next year, so I don't quite understand that. But the Department of Public Safety itself repeatedly says that it is, for example, here, And I'm citing to the Department of Public Safety Recruitment and Retention Plan Overview, 2018 to 23, page 6. Issue, factors impacting recruitment and retention initiatives. First thing, the department, this isn't the union, this isn't the workers. Lack of a defined benefit retirement program is a source of attrition and applicant disinterest. So we're being poached. Somewhere across the lower 48, I promise you this, Senator, there are the brass of DPS equivalents, sheriff's deputies, firefighting agencies in King County that are saying, can you believe these Alaskans? They're saying this. They're saying these guys produce incredible quality employees. They're fantastic public servants. And on year five, they're going to be ours. That is happening. So we are being poached. And so we're just on this conveyor belt. Oh, here come the new applicants. They're wet behind the ears. We're going to train them, and they're going to be great firefighters and public safety workers. And then they're gone. And this is the turnstile we're on. And again, this is Commissioner Cockrell saying this. So, you know, it's the administration itself saying we've got an issue. And by the way, this is all over this report. It's not just, I'm not cherry picking one thing. Here, page 4, losing a single trained and certified Alaska State Trooper results in the loss of an estimated $190,000. We need to stop this. And this is a very cautious, conservative way to do it.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Senator Rebeck.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Josephson. Thank you for being here to present this bill today. I hear you saying that we have a retention problem. Certainly, that's an issue of concern for the state, and especially with our first responders. I think that's something that's important to address. It causes us a little bit of concern based on kind of what we went through in the past. I think our PERS still has, last time I checked, $3.7 billion in unfunded liabilities, even after historic market returns. Now, I think we're better now than when those numbers were, but as you can imagine, we need to make sure we're doing our due diligence on this. So I was very happy to hear that we have stop gaps in place, levers, triggers, I think you called them. One of the things I noticed was that we have an indeterminate fiscal note. So I just have a couple questions here, Madam Chair. That was waiting on an actuarial analysis, and maybe there's a question for the state actuary, but I'm curious to know what we're waiting on for that, or if we have concerns, or how, kind of leading to the overarching question is, how can you make us absolutely certain that we won't run into unfunded liabilities like we're paying for now?
Through the chair, Senator Rebeck, if you're willing, I'm going to invite Ms. Sorenberg to answer that. I know the answer, I think, but I think she'll be better positioned.
Ms. Sorenberg?
Thank you. Ali Sorenberg for the record. Through the chair, Senator Rebeck, we did get a full actuarial analysis last year in House Finance. We have been told that they will update that if this bill moves to Senate Finance Committee this year. It is a very, and I'm sure either Jim Puckett or Kevin Worley from the department could speak to this more if you wished, but it's a very intensive process to update those numbers and expensive for the state to do, as far as I'm aware. We do, however, have the analysis from last year, and that is on basis, but I can provide it to members as well. And there's also analysis from Flick Fornia, and he did a great presentation in House Finance last April that I would be happy to share with members of the committee as well.
Senator Rebeck?
Oh, that would be great, Madam Chair, if we could get those. Yeah, I very much appreciate that. I was curious on how you settled. So I was just sort of looking through Some of the concerns we've had a bunch of both pro and con sort of some correspondence from constituents and whatnot. Wanted to kind of wrap my head around how the percentages were chosen for contributions from the employer and the state. If you could walk me through that a little bit.
Through the chair, Senator Rivak, absolutely. So I'm going to actually skip ahead here.
Oh, if you're going to get to it.
Oh, no. It's fine. So this is from the Buck actuarial report from last year. So, and there is also a comparison chart, I believe, in this. Booklet, and I don't have mine here, but it is basically on page 3 of the booklet. There is a comparison between previous plans and this current plan, and I'll just walk you through that because that'll be the easiest way to do this. This current plan that's being proposed is less generous than Tier 3 in many ways, and similar to Tier 4 in many ways. One of those ways is the employee contribution. So currently, I, as a Tier 4 employee, not a public safety employee, but I am a Tier 4 employee, contribute 8% of my salary to my retirement. Tier 3 employees contribute 7.5%. Our plan went with an 8% to be the same as Tier 4, but
moved to 12.
And it could move to 12. And it would move to 12. And I understand that would be done incrementally by the ARM board, depending on market needs and if the plan fell below 90% funded. Initially, this bill had that range from 8 to 10%. And we were told that that was fairly safe. But that extra 2% was added in House Finance by the members to make it even more safe as far as how much employees could have to contribute. Employer contributions are the same. It's 22%, and that's the same across all the tiers. What's different about this is that this bill requires that no less than 12% goes directly to this plan to keep this plan solvent. So that's actually where the perceived cost of the bill comes in. And I have this quote up on the screen that I'll just read. And basically, it's this increase from the amount being deposited to the DB trust decreases from 12.2% to 10%. So it's that 2.2% change that is what's really reflected in the state's fiscal note. So that's where the quote-unquote cost of the bill is coming from. It's from less money being paid toward our unfunded liability over time. However, the employer contributions are still at that 22% rate. They aren't any different. Vesting is still 5 years across all the plans. Qualifications for retirement, we touched on that a little bit earlier. They're a little more stringent under this bill. Benefit calculation formulas are the same. We have that high five instead of the high three. And then the health reimbursement adjustment is 3%. So that's the little, if you look up on the screen, it's the little green triangle you're going to see on each of those pie charts. So the top pie chart is what currently happens for the employee, like for a Tier 4 employee. The bottom pie chart is what would happen under our new bill. And so it's really 9% is going straight to the HB 55 trust, the new trust established. 3% is still going to health reimbursement arrangement, and that makes the 12% employer contribution. And then 10% is still going to pay off the unfunded liability. It's just like a very small amount less. So does that help?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And maybe I didn't mean to pull you into the middle of your slideshow, assuming that you're going to present. So with that in mind, maybe I'll save questions till after after the presentation, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Representative. This is a complex bill, obviously, and having been here for some time, I did go through the 2006 changes we made because the retirement system was such a mess and we had such an unfunded liability. And also voted for Senator Egan's bill that we sent to the House that sort of stopped there. But I remember one of the discussions we had somewhere along the line was that you can't expect newcomers into the system to pay for the sins of the past. You can't collect money from somebody you hire now in order to pay for my retirement 22 years ago. But yet in Section 18, I definitely need to understand Section 18 because it seems to imply that 20% total employer contribution will be available for the past liability of the PERS system. Are we asking newcomers to pay for the mess in the past?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yes. But we're asking them to pay for, I think, 2.2% less of the mess than they're paying now. Do I have that right?
Not quite. Okay. Chair, through the chair, Senator Stevens, this is the employer contribution. So it is not me as the employee who's paying for the sins of the past. It is the employer paying for the sins of the past. So it is, they are paying.
Yeah, I misread that.
Yeah, so it's the state paying that 22% or, yeah.
We've had...
And just a reminder that when if you speak, if you could just mention who you are, just for those folks who are listening online, we have a couple folks who are going to be testifying.
Through the chair, Andy Josephson, State House. We've had some internal debates in the office of who's paying this. The state is paying. The employees are not paying for that extra 2%, which is what Ms. Orenberg said, and she's correct. But it generates a fiscal note. And I guess what I was wrong, she was right. But it has the appearance, when you look at the fiscal note, is saying, those are the bad guys causing the fiscal note. No. They're wanting to stay in Alaska in service. That's how I see it. The state will contribute less than otherwise to the unfunded liability, but it's for 2,300 people, and apparently it's going to burden the state 6 months more. So add that 20 years out, I'm told. This is what the testimony was last year. And we think that that's worth doing so that we don't have our employees poached out of state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on that, then what you're saying is that new employees will not be paying any of the past sins of the system. They will be fairly treated like everyone has been so far. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Stevens. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to start off by saying, number one, thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I'm honored to be a cross-sponsor. I don't ever want to see the state faced with the liability that it was faced with in the past. But I've been around for a very long time, and in particular on this issue, when I was staff to the assembly and also when I was on the assembly. You know, and when we go through the budget process and budget funding for police and fire training, only to realize that, oh my goodness, we're going to pay all this money for training. They're going to get trained, and then they're going to leave and go to Denver, like a lot of our police officers did, because they were able to carry their years of service to Denver and still get a defined benefit. It's really, really important that we have incentives in place so that we can hire good employees and reward them for the work that they're about to do and the work that they've done. So I support this bill, and I in particular support this bill because I've seen a lot of bills that were expensive and basically brought back a defined benefit along with the wonderful Cadillac health benefits. And this bill doesn't do that. This bill simply, and this is my understanding, provides a paycheck in the mail every month once somebody retires based on their contributions and the state contributions. And now instead of three highest, five highest, which is a difference. And with that said, I'm hopeful that we can finally, after many, many, many years, move forward and do the right thing on behalf of our public safety officers and eventually the rest of our public safety employees. With that said, I have a couple of questions. So with Tier 4, what kind of health benefits are provided in Tier 4? Because I'm really not clear on what they get when they retire, because I thought they got nothing.
Through the chair, and Ms. Orenberg can add to this, but they get, obviously when they're working, they get what any state employee gets, which is fantastic.
Right.
When they retire, they get a pool of money that has been set aside at 3% per annum of their salary in the form of a health reimbursable arrangement. And they can use it, as I understand it, to purchase premiums so that their insurance continues. But it's going to be time limited. And, you know, they would have, at some point, it will be depleted. And to continue in the state plan, they would have to be out of pocket to do that. But Ms. Orenberg may be able to add something to that.
Elise Orenberg, for the record, through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I actually might defer to Jim Puckett with the department who's online. I could add to what Representative Josephson said by saying there's some tricks to how the health reimbursement arrangement works in Tier 4. For example, you do have to retire directly from your state employment in order to use that money. But I think the department could do a better job.
If I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't need any further explanation. But what my next question is, so with this new Tier 5, if you will, that's the same kind of health plan the retirees would have, which isn't a Cadillac plan, but it's like you got to figure it out plan. But anyway.
The chair called a Ford, but not a Cadillac, but yes.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's it for now. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Next, I'm going to move to the invited testimony portion of the bill's presentation today. Thank you, Representative Josephson, and your staff, Elise Orenberg. Paul Miranda, if you could come forward. You're the president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. If you could state your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Miranda. I'm the president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. I'd like to first start by thanking the committee for your willingness to work on this important issue. It's an issue that's important both to the men and women serving Alaska in public safety jobs and also important to the state as it deals with the budget and a desire to tackle these important public safety issues facing our state. The purpose of my presentation today is to illustrate to the committee that Alaska is facing a recruitment and retention crisis, and specifically that there is a real cost that we should consider to maintaining the status quo. So since Tier 4 became effective in 2006, we've seen several unintended consequences that are now very apparent for Alaska's public safety employees. We've seen recruitment difficulties in our public safety agencies, such as the Department of Public Safety with the troopers, corrections, and municipal fire and police departments across the state. Alaska can no longer compete with the lower 48 when attempting to recruit public safety employees. Police officers and paramedics are in high demand across the country, and we're at a clear disadvantage when compared to what other states are offering for their retirement benefits. You cannot find another public safety retirement plan like Tier 4 anywhere else in the country. Communities across our state struggle to fill public safety positions, and the Tier 4 retirement system is part of that reason. We've seen retention costs that impact all of our agencies, and I will illustrate some of these costs in the later slides. Dollars are crucial in our state, and they're being siphoned off as we're being forced to deal with separations and a recruiting process that's made much more difficult by our benefit package. Once Alaska's agencies find an employee and invest time and money into them, there is a need to get a return on that investment. And as it also mentions here, you know, we should expect to see increased workers' compensation costs as our agencies become staffed with an older workforce that lacks the financial security to retire. And there are other unforeseen costs as well. Madam Chair, these are examples. These next two slides are examples of quotes from testimony from fire and police chiefs across the state describing the recruitment and retention difficulties that we are facing. I'd be happy to read them if you would like, or I can just leave the slide up for a moment.
Feel free to read it. We have folks who are listening in online.
So. Okay. Alaska cannot compete with agencies offering defined benefit retirement plans. This has left us with vacancies in multiple academies as applicants decide to pursue careers elsewhere. This was APD Chief Justin Dahl. Currently, I serve as the fire chief of an organization that trains and educates the future of Alaska's fire service. I frequently watch our young folks attain jobs in the lower 48 at a highly successful rate. They are leaving our state with the education and experience that we desperately need to keep. University Fire Chief Forrest Kuiper. We are also seeing younger officers who are very mobile, very portable, with no pension plan tying them here, leave for other opportunities in other departments. Anchorage Police Chief Ken McCoy. The inability to provide a defined benefit retirement system has placed the department at critically low staffing levels. And this was an excerpt from the DPS Recruitment and Retention Plan Overview 2018 to 2023. We are seeing our highly trained, qualified, and experienced officers leave APD to work out of state for other law enforcement agencies offering competitive defined benefit retirement systems. APD Police Chief Justin Dahl. And finally, the turnover of career staff appears to be higher compared with other clients. Turnover not only has a financial effect on the department, but it also loses valuable experience. And this was a Fitch and Associates consultant report to the Capital City Fire and Rescue Department here in Juneau. So I'd like to just briefly talk about workers' compensation costs. So Tier 4 has been in place now for about 16 years. So we have not yet seen an individual work a full 20 to 25 year career in public safety and then try to retire. The average hire age of a public safety employee is 31 years old. So this means that as our agencies become staffed with an older workforce that does not have the financial security to retire, we should expect to see increased workers' compensation costs due to the physical nature of the job and the likelihood, illustrated here in the slide, that older public safety employees get injured at a much higher rate. And this information here is from a recent study out of California, talking specifically about what they refer to here as MSDs, or musculoskeletal disorders, essentially musculoskeletal injuries. And as the quote says there, firefighters age 55 and older have an MSD injury rate that is more than double that of the youngest firefighters and more than 10 times greater than that of private sector workers of the same age. It's apparent that older firefighters are associated with much higher rates of reported workplace injuries than both younger firefighters and private sector workers. And also, this is consistent with the notion that the rigorous physical demands of firefighting subject them to trauma throughout their working lives, making them more subject to MSDs in later years. And I think it's also worth mentioning that additionally, we have to consider more than just physical injuries. Individuals who have reached a point where they are not mentally ready to do the job anymore should have the ability to leave. You know, there are reasons why you see in the public safety line of work, 20 to 25 year retirements very commonly around the country. The physical tolls as well as the mental tolls of the job build up over time. And we need people to be ready to leave when it's their time, not only for their sake personally, but for also the sake of the communities that they serve. This slide just highlights some other unforeseen costs, such as, you know, departments experiencing increased overtime costs due to inadequate staffing, increased training costs, loss of operational capabilities, loss of experience and future leadership, and a rise in organizational stress levels. And what we're seeing, and what I believe you'll hear from some of our public safety chiefs around the state, is that we're seeing our departments be sort of hollowed out, where, you know, we have those people who have been working there, you know, for that 17 to 20 plus year range, who are essentially kind of at the end of their career, getting ready to retire. You have a lot of younger people, but that middle group of kind of experience, people who would typically be kind of those mid-level supervisory ranks, those are the people that we're seeing leave for other states. So this slide discusses how our current recruitment and retention difficulties highlighted by our public safety agencies in the state. These are all occurring with, this slide here says about 40 to 50% of the workforce in the DB system. So Tier 4 currently makes up about 50 to 60% of our public safety workforce. And I believe the more accurate number today is about 65% of our public safety workforce is currently in Tier 4, that 2,200 number that Representative Josephson was referring to. So we should consider that these problems will become magnified as our Tier 4 workforce population grows. And a public safety workforce that is 100% portable is a frightening thought for an officer of, or a chief of any public safety department when they look at their whole workforce and essentially they're all portable. There's nothing really tying them here. So in the next few slides, and I'll go through these fairly quickly, Madam Chair, I looked at some examples of, what is the cost of maintaining the status quo, of losing the number of public safety employees that we're currently losing. So there's about 3,400 public safety employees in the state. In these following examples, I used $120,000 as an average training cost because I believe it's a very safe, conservative estimate of what it costs to train the average, whether it's a police officer, trooper, firefighter. In many cases, it's much higher than that. So agencies such as DPS and DOC, the Department of Public Safety and Department of Corrections, have previously testified of non-retirement separations of greater than 6%. And again, this is at a time when Tier 4 makes up about 60% of our public safety workforce. So these next few slides will show the costs of Alaska losing 1%, 2%, and 3% of a Tier 4 public safety workforce each year. And again, we'll use that $120,000 training cost and not increase that for inflation over a 20-year period. So as you can see here, with 1% of the workforce leaving, that's about 34 employees. You multiply that by $120,000, and the cost per year going out the door would be about $4 million. Over a 5-year period, that's a little over $20 million. And as you can see, over a 20-year period, you're up to $81 million. The next slide, 2%, 68 employees, 1-year cost of about $8.1 million. And again, going out to 5 and 20 years, you see that cost increase to $40 million and $160 million. And then 3%, 102 employees, a $12 million approximately one-year cost, up to $61 million for a five-year cost, and then almost $45 million for a 20-year cost. And like I kind of mentioned before, these costs don't fully represent all of the problems that result from our non-retirement separation of public safety employees. It's just one aspect. And it's important to note that these costs essentially far outweigh the cost of House Bill 55. So I think the point there is that, you know, when we're looking at cost, we just ask that both sides are measured what is the cost of maintaining the status quo. And it's also important to note, and I can provide the committee members more information about this, but several other jurisdictions, other states and local jurisdictions across the country have restored defined benefit systems after having very similar experience to what we are experiencing in Alaska today. And in conclusion, I hope you saw from some of the testimony that I highlighted, and hopefully you'll hear in public testimony, that both labor and management are united in their support for this bill. We have a shared interest in ensuring quality public servants fill the ranks of Alaska's public safety agencies. And adopting an adequate retirement plan with reasonable costs, fair benefits, and shared risk will help us in this mission. Again, I'd like to thank the committee for your willingness to work on this issue, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Miranda? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate you testifying today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Todd Chambers, who's the fire chief for the Fairbanks Fire Department. Todd, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record and provide your invited testimony, please.
For the opportunity to testify. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to testify. My name is Todd Chambers. I'm the fire chief at Fairbanks Fire Department, and I'm speaking in favor of House Bill 55. I appreciate the testimony today, and I'd just like to state that the lack of a defined benefit retirement has resulted in a severe increase in employee turnover. We're sitting at about 17% rate of turnover here at our department in the last 3 years, particularly with our entry-level firefighter positions. 50% of our employees at the fire department here in Fairbanks have been here for less than 3 years. And with that entry-level turnover churn and our experienced personnel retiring, as Mr. Miranda said, you know, we have a big gap and a lack of experienced personnel to fill those vital roles for supervising. Now, these are our captains and our battalion chiefs. These positions require experience on the job time. And if it's not there, we're talking that this is a very real issue for life safety and property protection. Over 60% of the people who've left our employment in the last 3 years have stated that one of the reasons for leaving was availability of a defined benefit retirement where they were relocating to. I can't help but urge the passing of House Bill 55 to help address these issues, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chambers. Next, Angelina Salvato with the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association.
Hi, yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee and other guests for allowing me to testify today. My name is Angelina Salvato. My former last name was Fraze. I have testified last session in the House regarding House Bill 55 and that I am in favor of this. I've been a police officer with the Anchorage Police Department for 15 years. Before that, I was a probation officer. So that makes me a Tier 3 defined benefit employee. But right now I work in backgrounds and recruiting with the Anchorage Police Department, but today I'm speaking to you on behalf of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. I am the communications officer for them. Everyone that has testified before me and spoke on this bill has done a great job expressing the importance of this bill. So my testimony is going to be just probably a little bit more personal. Like I said, I've been in law enforcement for 20 years. I just hit my 20 year in November, so I can retire anytime. I have worked not only in backgrounds and recruiting, but at the academy. So I work with employees for about 6 months before they become police officers. It's a long hiring process, a very in-depth one. Then they are here with us for 6 months in training, another 4 months on FTO. And really, as a police officer, I didn't really understand my job. It's a complex job as a police officer. The community demands a very high standard from us. And it took me, I would say, about 5 years to really understand my job and know that I could respond to any call and kind of know how to deal with that. With everything that police officers are facing right now, with the national narrative, police officers, public safety officers, peace officers are under attack from all sides, not only literally, but figuratively as well. So we are fielding calls from officers all around the country. One of their first questions is about retirement. And so as I take those calls here and background for recruiting, obviously I have to explain that we are in a 401k style retirement, and you know, many of them are disappointed with that. We do, like Miranda stated, we do hire slightly younger officers that aren't laterals. They come into us at 21, 25 years old sometimes, and they have no idea about retirement. It wasn't until I was involved in an officer-involved shooting in 2012, after I'd been in law enforcement for about 11 years, that I really started thinking about retirement. And so it's our job as leaders, as unions, as legislators, to set these young people up for something they're not even thinking about. They're exempted from Social Security, so they have no nest egg. These young officers have no stability. They're going day to day in their job as police officers, firefighters. And when they hit about 5 to 7 years, that's when we see them being called back by family, by obligations in the War 48. Oftentimes they're coming to us from the military. They're starting a young family. They hit that 5 years and they realize they can go and they can leave us and they can take all of our expensive training with them. And so what we've seen, in Anchorage, at least, and I know across the state, I've heard the same thing, is not only this recycle that everyone's already been talking about, this expensive recycle, but a real leadership gap. We have now, my academy was 21 people. I was the first Tier 4 academy. I was grandfathered in to Tier 3, so the majority of my academy was Tier 4. It was in January of 2007. There were 21 of us that started that academy, and there are two left here at the Anchorage Police Department in a Tier 4 situation. So who are our future leaders? Who are our future chiefs of police and fire captains and fire chiefs? That's really where I worried as a community member. I've born and raised in Alaska, and we have a professional public safety network of leaders as well as new people, and they move up the ranks. And so I'm very concerned that we don't have those leaders, and we've got to do something to change that. So again, I appreciate you allowing us to testify on this, and I really encourage you to support this bill as it moves forward through your Senate. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Angelina. Appreciate your patience. Next, Justin Mack, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony.
Yes, hello. My name is, through the chair, my name is Justin Mack. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before the committee. I'm Vice President of the Anchorage Firefighters and Vice President of the Alaska Professional Firefighters. I currently serve as a captain with the Anchorage Fire Department and have worked for AFD for the past 10 years. I have a wife and two young daughters. My wife and I are both lifelong Alaskans. We have and will hear a lot about recruitment and retention and how this new system would bring immediate improvements to local municipalities and the state of Alaska. I would like to take this opportunity to discuss the risks of a plan like this, how HB 55 addressed those risks, and what the cost of doing nothing looks like. The legacy pension systems included full medical after 25 years of service for public safety. Tier 4 changed that to a 3% health reimbursement arrangement account. The cost of medical and pension systems can be as high as one-third of the total cost. This bill takes best practices of some of the most well-funded plans of the U.S. and limits the retirement medical benefit. This feature alone severely reduces liability on the state. much like Tier 4, this limits the burden of healthcare on the state of Alaska. We strongly believe that our public safety members deserve a retirement that is dignified and includes a medical component, but the risk to the state also needs to be taken into account. And our goal is to have a well-funded, sustainable system for our public safety workers. This bill includes additional provisions that help protect the state from an unfunded liability. If the fund underperforms for whatever reason, pandemic, housing crash, the Armed Board has the ability to increase employee and employer contributions. This feature has never existed in Alaska. It is a direct reflection of the concerns brought forward by the administration and the legislature. Not only do the employer and employee contributions have mechanisms to address funding, but retirees have skin in the game as well if funding ever becomes an issue. Other provisions include a five-year salary average rather than three, which better captures the career of a public safety worker and prevents overtime spiking. And we have included a minimum retirement age, both issues brought forward by members of the legislature. The risk or cost of doing nothing has been well described. Tier 4 members are not staying in Alaska. They come here, receive top-notch training and certification, then they are recruited to a state with a pension. The lower 48 gets experienced public safety members, and we put the bill for their training. We can increase wages, and that will get more people in the door, but it does nothing to address the retention portion. It simply gives the officer or firefighter a bigger chunk of money when they leave the state for a defined benefit. Labor and management agree in both the problem we are facing and the solution we are offering. There are members in public safety who disagree with the minimum retirement age. They do not like the lack of medical, and they are concerned that this bill doesn't go far enough. But these are the safeguards that the bill has to address risk for the state. We have to show that this system will work in good markets and poor. Our police officers, state troopers, corrections officers, and firefighters understand risk. Whether it's an officer arriving on scene of an armed suspect, a corrections officer dealing with a violent inmate, or a firefighter making a rescue in a burning building, we accept that our profession has risk. We train hard, we acknowledge that the risk is there, and we implement safeguards and best practices to mitigate that risk down to an acceptable level. We're taking the same approach with this bill to ensure that those who serve are also supported when they no longer can do the job they swore to do. A quote-unquote zero-risk solution will simply not accomplish the goals we share for public safety in Alaska. We cannot shift all the risk to public safety employees and expect them to stay in Alaska. This plan is a shared risk solution with provisions built in to significantly limit the risk for the state and ensure we can recruit, retain, and offer a dignified retirement to our public safety members. Please consider reaching out to police and fire leadership in your local communities and ask them about their recruitment and retention experience. Ask them about the experience gap that is widening in their departments. We have a chance to set a new course for public safety in Alaska. And on behalf of all firefighters across the state, we humbly ask that the legislator move forward with this bill. Thank you for your time and your service to the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much, Justin. Next, Randy McClellan.
Testimony. HB 55. My name is Randy McClellan. I'm a staff sergeant with the Department of Corrections. I've been with the department nearly 25 years, and I'm also the president of the Alaska Correctional Officers Association. ACOA represents about 940 correctional officers throughout Alaska. This is a very dangerous profession. Correctional officers face dangers like no others, with frequent assaults, daily violence. Throw in COVID-19 the last 2 years, where officers are locked in mods for 12 to 16 hours a day, with hundreds of COVID-positive inmates. Officers getting COVID only to be sent home without compensation and potentially expose their friends and family members to the COVID that they were exposed to on the work site. We have a significant recruitment and retention crisis throughout Alaska. The state is having an incredibly hard time recruiting new officers and are losing current officers at a record-setting rate due to dangers on the job, COVID-19, and Tier 4 is the top examples. We have a significant staffing crisis in DOC. Last year, 2021 alone, we lost 152 officers from a workforce of 940. That's over 16% of our workforce. a new record for us. That's up from an average of about 120, which is already, I think by anybody's standards, an unacceptable number. When they leave, they're taking their $10,000 hiring bonus and all of the costs and time we've invested in them in the hiring and training process, and none of which I think has been spoken to by everybody so far, none of which is cheap. Everybody's incurring an exorbitant cost in training these new employees over and over and over. Retention leads to understaffing. Understaffing severely impacts safety and security. And the training with new officers, we have no experienced officers to train them. Additionally, the overtime that existing employees are incurring is astronomical. And the personal effect it has on them and their mental stability, their families, where they miss, you know, birthdays, holidays, sporting events, they're being forced to work an incredible amount of overtime hours. The overtime budget for this year alone, I think, will shock anyone's conscience that looks at those numbers. It's another, unfortunately, I hate to say, it's another record we've set this year along with the retention issues, the overtime budget, because it's incredibly hard to hire new employees. One of the causes for the staffing crisis is obviously the Tier 4 retirement system. Not competitive with other law enforcement agencies around the country. I'm constantly hearing from officers leaving just after 5 years of service. The common story they tell is, why should I stay? I can get a job with equal or better benefits and not get assaulted. My family doesn't get threatened. I'm not getting exposed to COVID in the workplace. What's my incentive? And they always look to the few Tier 3s that are left and say, I understand why you guys are making a career of this. I don't have the same incentives that you do. Every time the DOC loses an experienced officer, we're forced to backfill that position with an inexperienced recruit. We have to replace over 150 experienced officers per year. We're systematically compromising safety and security. We have to address our recruitment and retention crisis, and House Bill 55 is a positive step towards that goal. For that reason, I urge you, your support of HB 55. I'd be happy to answer any questions about our staffing or retention of DOC, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't see any questions. Next, Jeremy Conklin. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, thank you. My name is Sergeant Jeremy Conklin. I am the president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. I appreciate your time today, and I think that the previous presenters and Representative Josephson did a very thorough job of going through the bill and highlighting all of the aspects of this bill that make it a reasonable bill and a good solution to the recruitment and retention crisis that I think all of our public safety agencies are facing. I just want to highlight a couple of things that really stand out to me, and frankly, it'll be somewhat localized to Anchorage, but as Anchorage is the largest law enforcement department in the state, I think it's telling. We here in Anchorage and across this state have, as Angie spoke about, a level of service and professionalism in our police officers, firefighters, and correctional officers that has been created by a culture. And that culture exists today. And what I am really concerned about is as we begin to lose the next generation of police officers and firefighters and correctional officers who are going to carry that culture forward, who are going to ensure that the citizens of this state get the type of public safety service they deserve, they are accustomed to, and they expect, that we are going to see that culture begin to leave as well. And we're going to be left with such a gap in experience and such a gap of community trust and engagement that I fear we may end up like some other cities in the lower 48 that don't have the professional level of policing, firefighting, and correctional officers that we do up here. The second thing that I want to talk about is how, I think what's unique about HB 55 specifically is that you have everybody from the colonel of the Alaska State Troopers to the three previous Anchorage police chiefs, Justin Dahl, Ken McCoy, and now Mike Curl, who have all reached out and who have all identified that the lack of a defined benefit is negatively impacting their ability to staff their departments. Fire chiefs from across the state have said the same thing. The correctional officers have said the same thing. I, as the president of APDEA, I have about 550 to 560 members that I represent, and I'm very often presented with a lot of problems. But it's rare, and I'm sure as leaders of our state, you probably experienced this as well, it's rare to be presented with a problem and a solution, especially a solution that is presented to you along with the problem by everybody who's impacted by it and that everybody universally agrees upon. With over 60% of my members in Tier 4, I would just urge this committee and the legislature to pass HB 55. It is a request that is coming from all levels of law enforcement and fire across the state. And we desperately need to make a change to ensure that the level professional level of service that our state deserves is carried on into the future after we are all gone. So again, I thank you all for your time and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Ryan Frost. If you could state your name, affiliation, and provide your testimony.
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Frost, and I'm a policy analyst with the Pension Integrity Project at Reason Foundation. I've been with Reason since 2019, but before that, I spent 7 years as the research and policy manager for the police and fire pension system in Washington State.
Ryan, if you – I'm sorry about this, but we had – folks testifying, but this is the public testimony portion of the bill, so I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony for House Bill 55. I apologize for the interruption, Ryan.
Oh, no problem. Do you want me to pick up where I left off?
Actually, if you could state your name for the record and begin again.
Yeah, no problem. Again, Ryan Frost, and I'm a policy analyst with the Pension Integrity Project at Reason Foundation. I've been with them since 2019, but before that, I spent 7 years as a research and policy manager for the police and fire pension system in Washington State, which is one of the top three funded pension plans in the country. And that's primarily been accomplished by that plan keeping up to date with best practices in plan and funding design. Our pension team has been a key pro bono technical consultant on 55 pension reforms over the past 6 years, the two largest of those being the reform of the public safety plan in Arizona, and then just last year, the Texas Employees Retirement System reform. Those 55 reforms have included new defined benefit tiers, new hybrid design tiers, new cash balance, and new defined contribution tiers. And each of those reforms has...
Ryan, I think we've lost you. Can... Go ahead and take a brief at ease. Called back to order. It seems we've lost Ryan Frost. Ryan, if you are able to call back in to provide the rest of your testimony, or if you'd like to provide it in writing, that would be also appropriate. Next, Cody Carver.
Hello?
Cody, go ahead and state your name for the record and provide your testimony.
All righty. Hi, my name is Cody Carver, and I'm testifying in support of House Bill 55. I'm a firefighter paramedic with the Bellingham Fire Department here in Washington, and I've been a firefighter for over 12 years now. A little bit about myself and how I got to where I am today. I was born and raised in Soldotna, Alaska, and I always dreamed of staying in Alaska. Once I decided I wanted to become a firefighter, I moved to Fairbanks, Alaska, in 2009 to work at the University Fire Department and to go to paramedic school. After this, I moved to Juneau, Alaska to work with Capital City Fire and Rescue as a career firefighter paramedic, where I worked for a year and a half. And then I worked with the Anchorage Fire Department for 4 years as a career firefighter paramedic. The Anchorage Fire Department was my dream department because my friends and family are still currently there. However, after educating myself more about the Tier 4 retirement system, and what it had to offer as a pension and disability, I was quite frankly disappointed and decided to explore my options in Washington for two reasons. One, the uncertainty of a defined contribution retirement plan. And two, what if I were to get injured on the job and I couldn't return to work? Tier 4 will not protect you, and I've witnessed this firsthand. There are many departments in the Washington area that are hiring lateral firefighters, which means they can hire experienced firefighters, and there's perks for both the city and the firefighter. Lateral firefighters generally have higher wages. When compared to entry-level firefighters, there's more sick leave, more vacation time, all of which is appealing to someone in my position who was starting over 3 years ago with a new department. And the city will obviously save money with a lateral academy since it's generally shorter than an entry-level academy. My lateral firefighter academy in Bellingham was only 6 weeks compared to my entry-level academy in Anchorage for the Anchorage Fire Department, which was over 3 months. There are many fire departments here in Washington that offer comparable pay, great benefits, better schedules, and a pension with disability, and that's the reason why I'm here now. And to put everything in perspective, if there was a pension for Tier 4 members in the state of Alaska, I would have never left my dream department with the Anchorage Fire Department. I strongly urge you to support House Bill 55. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Cody, for your patience. I see even you called in at 1:30 when we started the committee. Appreciate you providing that testimony. Next, I'm going to go back to Ryan Frost. Ryan, if you could state your name and organization again for the record and continue your testimony.
Yeah, I apologize. The call was dropped. But Ryan Frost, Policy Analyst with the Pension Integrity Project. And so picking up where I left off, I'd also like to say that we're here not in opposition of the bill, just neutral with questions. We understand there's issues facing the current crop of public safety employees. There are options that can be used to address this. But the current pension system does have zero risk. A DB system is riskier than a DC. That's just how the two designs function. But the amount of that risk can be mitigated greatly through plan funding design. And that risk mitigation, in our opinion, is where the current draft of this bill is lacking. And to be clear, this is a defined benefit. There's nothing inherently wrong with the defined benefit system, but I'm unsure why some have called it a hybrid plan. Hybrid, that is commonly known in the pension world, combines parts of a DB and DC pension benefit that, when combined, allows for an adequate benefit in retirement that lowers the risk to the employer that a full DB entails. The type of health savings account being offered, which numerous other states also offer, is kind of would be more classified under the umbrella of other post-employment benefits. But if it is the legislature's desire to open up a guaranteed benefit design to public safety employees of Alaska, that can be done, but it must be done in a way that protects the state from financial risk. The bill would attach new public safety employees to a plan, although there are some risk mitigation cost mitigation measures that we've heard previously. That plan has had trouble with their funding spanning back two decades. So I'd like to just lay out a few pension best practices for the committee to consider and where we think each House Bill 55 does fall short. So a successful plan pays the full actuarially determined rate using a full 50-50 cost sharing method. For a DB plan, this means that when underperformance happens in the market or any of the other dozens of economic and demographic assumptions aren't met, employees and employers equally share the pay down of that added debt to the pension system. I know the bill is sold as being risk shared, but the bill doesn't pay the actual cost of earned benefits as is determined by the plan's actuary, and also doesn't equally share those costs between all stakeholders. Setting rates in statute and capping those rates doesn't really, it's kind of a design from yesteryear that doesn't follow the best practices in pension design. And it becomes even more of an issue during down markets because if you don't have auto adjustments to rates during periods of market downturns, you're basically asking the pension board to raise rates at the same time that they have the employers are having economic issues elsewhere. And we've seen in many states that they simply just don't adopt those higher rates and then the plan adds debt. So the best funded plans also don't look to past investment experience when setting future assumed rates of return. The median rate of return across the country for investments sits at 7%, And this bill would put all employees into a plan assuming 7.38%. Not only does that number fail to track with past investment experience in Alaska, but it also severely overestimates the 10 to 15 year market assumptions that are being used by other institutional investors. For example, two of the largest three plans in the country, the California Public Employees Retirement System and the New York State Local System, have both stated in the past year that they only assume to earn about 6% over the next 10 years. So both systems made immediate and prudent changes to their assumed rates of return, with New York even dropping all the way down to 5.9%. And I've seen the bill is also being sold as cost neutral due to having the same contribution rate as the DC plan. But if this new tier earned even what we would consider to be an optimistic 6.5% while assuming 7.38%, the cost will rapidly begin to spike. And quite quickly, the cap on the employer rate will be hit, and the employer rate will continue to climb higher and higher to pay for those missed returns. And the added interest at 7.38% at each year of missed returns is going to add to the plan's unfunded liabilities. So in conclusion, there is a way forward that can meet whatever needs this legislative body and stakeholders desire. But it's our opinion that House Bill 55 is currently written would not put this new tier on a successful path. We'd be happy to work with the committee and stakeholders to help draft a design that best meets those needs and follows current best practices in pension design. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Frost, first I want to thank you for your testimony right now and your written testimony, which I read. But my question to you is, what do you think about the current Tier 4 plan for public safety employees? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, so thank you for the question. We've done some preliminary analysis of the DC plan. It does seem to be lacking a little bit in benefit adequacy. The simplest way to rectify that would be bump up the contribution rates to the current DC plan, but obviously there's other options as well.
Madam Chair, may I follow up?
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you for your comment. So you said there are other options. What's wrong with this option? Besides, the testimony that you had to say, because I think it's a very viable option, but if you don't mind answering my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I would just reiterate the things that I had testified on. It's just they're just missing a few risk and cost mitigation factors we think are very important, especially when you're this is the best time to really nail down the cost and risk when you have a new plan coming in with no liabilities. You want to make sure that the plan is set off on a good foot to not have any debt. Unfortunately, that's all I could really say. The things I mentioned in my testimony are the only issues that we would have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Jeffrey Jones, if you can state your name for the record, provide your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Jeffrey Jones. Members of the Senate Labor Commerce Committee, thank you for your time. I'm Jeffrey Jones, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm a fire medic and have been with the Ketchikan Fire Department since July of 2007, making it 14 and a half years that I've been in the PERS system. A return to a defined benefit plan can help the state and municipalities mitigate the costs associated with training and turnover to states with existing DB plans. In my time at the department, I've received multiple certifications. I'm a Fire Officer 3, Firefighter 2, Paramedic, which I also have my associate's degree in paramedicine, Fire Instructor 2, CPR and multi-level EMT instructor, and I'm the only child passenger safety technician in Ketchikan. This was all accomplished with the cost of the city. I'm not saying I'm irreplaceable, but I can tell you it'll be a long time and a lot of money before someone earns all the certifications and experience I have. My family is actively searching for a new place to call home, a state that has a DB program. My family has roots here in Alaska, and I don't want to relocate them, but it is well known that if a firefighter works at after 55, it puts them at a greater risk of dying to a line of duty death, including heart attack. I want to be able to hold my grandchildren and enjoy my retirement. I started when I was 28 and will not realistically be able to retire at an age that affords me the ability to do so if my retirement plan remains the same. At 58, I'll have 30 years, still not enough to retire. Can you imagine a 58-year-old carrying someone down a flight of stairs or out of a fire? Not saying it can't be done or won't be attempted, but it puts me, the public, and my coworkers at a higher risk. The relatively small increase in the cost of the proposed DB program is money well spent when you consider the value of retaining employees throughout a career, as opposed to training new people and not having the benefits in place to keep them. The cycle is already happening, resulting in the export of homegrown talent states with better options for retirees. I'm encouraging you to pass House Bill 55. Thank you for your time and consideration of the bill.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. Next, we have...
I will not realistically be able to retire at an age that affords me the ability to do so if my retirement plan remains the same.
So we have three additional people online to testify. If I could ask if you have a new idea or something to share. Otherwise, if you could condense your testimony. We've run over almost 20 minutes now, but I do appreciate your patience. And with that, Chuck Kopp.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators, Labor and Commerce Committee. I really appreciate the hearing of the bill this morning. I'll get right to the point, Madam Chair. One thing that hasn't been brought up by previous speaker, Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Kopp. Winfluence Strategies is my business, and I am a public policy consultant with the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association on pension reform. So my full disclaimer there. Madam Chair, if you look at the National Bureau of Labor Statistics for both police and firefighters, they look at life expectancy. Life expectancy of a career police officer is 21.9 years shorter than the average general population in the United States. Life expectancy for a career firefighter is 15 years shorter. These are real numbers. These are numbers that pension actuaries use all the time. I pay a higher life insurance rate as a retired career police officer. I learned that as soon as my New York Life agent realized I was a retired police officer. You just go into a higher rate. And it's well backed up. We are looking at men and women who literally give a quarter of their life, and they are going to die early on the average. I retired from a full career. I've already buried five people I worked with. I was 55 years old last year, Madam Chair, and I had a heart incident hiking in the Chugach Range. And fortunately, my wife got me to Providence in time, and I had a near complete main aorta blockage. And the doctor said that if I hadn't got in there, I would have been gone very soon. And that would have been right about 21.9 years shorter for police officers. Most of that, they know it's not just diet and exercise. A lot of you know I work out as much as can, you know, but it's not that it's stress. And stress calcifies your arteries and your blood vessels faster than anything. And there's only so many shots of adrenaline that a public safety employee can handle in a lifetime without it taking a significant toll. That does happen to our men and women who serve. It's an irrevocable loss, but it's something they do voluntarily. And I would do the job again. In full disclaimer, I have a son-in-law who is a police officer here in Alaska, and I tried to talk him out of it for a whole week when he told me that's what he wanted to do. But I'm proud of him for doing it. But I know he's going to give something up. And what we do give up is a big chunk of life expectancy. And I would just ask this committee, you've already heard the numbers, and it's a small way the state can recognize what we're asking our public safety families to do. We are looking at people with significantly reduced lifespans as a result, and it's reality. And there's multiple medicine sites, you know, the National Institute of Library Medicine and the United States, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, all confirm these shortened life expectancies. So thank you so much, Madam Chair. I can answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Glad things worked out for you. I don't see any questions. Next, we have Corey Luck, followed by Craig Warren. Corey, if you could state your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Corey Luck, and I'm a member of the City of Mukilteo, Washington Fire Department. I'm a firefighter EMT. Just real quick, all I wanted to state is that prior to working for the City of Mukilteo in Washington, I worked for Capital City Fire and Rescue in Juneau, Alaska. The certifications and training that I obtained in Alaska are transferable over to Washington State. With the uncertainty with COVID brought, the only thing certain was that I did not have a defined contributions plan. And with so much uncertainty with my career and with my family, I had to go to a position that had a defined contribution state, and that's ultimately what led me to leave the state of Alaska. I can 100% tell you that if there was a defined contribution plan, I would still be working for Capital City Fire and Rescue. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Corey.
Next, we have Craig Warren with the Sitka Fire, Chief. So, Mr. Warren, if you could provide your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Craig Warren. I'm the Fire Chief of the City and Borough of Sitka. And I am sorry to say I am in the Anchorage Airport, so if there's background noise, I apologize in advance. I'm going to rehash everything that's been stated so far, and I actually have zero notes in front of me, so I hope this makes sense. Every new employee that I hire, I make sure and reiterate the fact that there is not going to be much retirement for them, especially if they don't do a long, long career. And as been stated, we don't want 65-year-old firemen, 65-year-old police officers coming running into our houses. These jobs are taxing on the body, and we need to offer some retirement at a little bit earlier age. Most of the municipalities in Alaska that opted out of paying into Social Security, and several of them have even opted out of paying into SBS. So the Tier 4 plan is really all that is available to a lot of these people. It's not going to cover it in the long run. And so I would like to offer my support for House Bill 55. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chief Warren. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on House Bill 55? Okay, is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, House Bill 55 public testimony is now closed. I did just want to take a moment and thank and recognize the four individuals, three men and a woman from the Juneau Capital City Fire and Rescue. Appreciate you sitting through the entire meeting, listening to the bill, and the public testimony, and just wanted to recognize you and thank you for your service to the state of Alaska and the community here. With that, the meeting is adjourned.